Bears Rod Crane, a Microsoft Office 365 MVP who knows practically everything there is about Office 365. He does stand-up events talking about Office 365. He writes about Office 365 on his blog site, and he does in-person training sessions and training videos about Office 365. There's also me, Mark Keane. I'm the voiceover guy and producer of this podcast. I'm also a Microsoft Azure technical specialist, PowerShell extraordinaire, and IT consultant, helping people move to the Microsoft cloud and consume it by helping them to make sense of it. This is a Need to Know podcast with Robert Crane and Mark Keane. It's all about the Microsoft cloud.
Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and twisting the knobs and dialing all the information at the back there is Mark Keane. Mark, welcome.
Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. Middle of the day. We'll do something a bit different for this podcast. We're both wide awake, I hope.
People don't know that, though.
It could be midnight,
or it could be any time of the day, really.
Thank God for the internet. It's the only time you get work done, generally. All right, so let's talk some news. There's been some big news. Do you want to kick off with the Azure stuff, which I think you're bursting to tell everybody?
Azure news. There is a bit of news happening in the Azure world this week. Remote app. What is that, Rob?
Remote app basically is terminal server as a service.
Well done. So Azure put it in 2 years ago, version 1, of course. Now, anything Microsoft version 1 is... I'm not going to go there. But basically, the announcement was that remote app is no more. They're going to be stopping the services for sale October 1, so you won't be able to buy it after October 1, 2016. But then they're going to turn off the service completely at the end of August 2017. The replacement being Citrix ZenApp Express, which is currently under development. So Citrix is in there. Now, Citrix has been in bed with Microsoft before, previously, so it's nothing new, I guess, on that front. But this is big news. So essentially, it will be Azure Remote App version 1 no more, and it'll be rebranded as Azure Remote App version 2 with Citrix being the... which will make it run in the background.
Have you used the Citrix product at all? Even having trouble saying it.
I have, and it's not bad. It's okay. Now, the other thing too is, I think, which comes at a good time in with this news, is the other announcement that came through as well, the new N series of virtual machines, which are currently in Azure Preview. So the new N series of virtual machines are out. This is all about multimedia experiences, and there's two sets of N series of virtual machines, is the NV series and the NC series. Now, just quickly to go through it, the NV series focuses on the visualization side of things. It's got a video card in there from NVIDIA, so that's a partnership between Microsoft and NVIDIA. It's also got other technologies in there as well, NVIDIA Grid. Now, Rob, these cards in these virtual machines, they're video cards. Take a guess how much they're worth.
Yeah, they're not cheap. I mean, they're pretty powerful stuff. They use them to run Bitcoin farms, as I understand it.
You and your Bitcoin farms. It's $7,500 each Australian to buy one of these cards to put in a server. So Microsoft has stuck these in these servers to give you the ability to run multimedia redirection or remote app services, or aka Citrix on top of it. So this is where the remote app version 2 is pretty much going to be going. And also too, the other part of that is the NC series, which is slightly different to the NV series, but it focuses more on the compute side of things. So it has a bit of a faster CPU behind it, but it also has other technologies behind there as well, like CUDA, which is the API that NVIDIA put out. And also, too, has another version of a video card, which is also around the same sort of price tag. It's about $8,500 in Australian money. And but the other part of that as well is Teradici. Have you heard of that, Rob?
Can't say that I have.
Okay, so Teradici is a company which has been around for a few years. Actually, more than a few, probably about five or six or a bit longer. They came out with a product called, or it's a protocol called PC over IP. Now, what it is, it's like a remote desktop protocol rather than using the current one that's out there. I can't remember what it is, but this is like using the Teradici one, PC over IP. It allows you to do run a computer remotely across a WAN, like running programs like Adobe Premiere Pro and AutoCAD, and also you can watch high definition video, like Netflix and stuff like that. Not that you would watch Netflix, but the benefit is, look, you've got these huge, humongous servers running in Azure, these N-Series servers. Yes, they're going to cost a bomb. However, big companies out there that are doing a lot of multimedia and video editing can get things done and edited 8 times the speed as normal because of the massive processing power in the background, and also, too, it takes advantage of that per minute billing with Azure. So here's a scenario for you. Company that runs 9 to 5, the guys come to work at 9 o'clock in the morning, spin up the virtual machines, they use them for what they need to do their video editing, edit the video and encode it within 8 times the speed of as normal, and then when they're done, they'll just shut down the virtual machine and go home for the day, sort of thing. So it does have an advantage in that respect.
Yeah, again, I think the thing, it's an on-demand thing. A lot of businesses that may not have access to those resources can now call on those, use them in the short period of time that they do need them without having to invest in huge amounts of hardware. So it gives that flexibility, sure. I mean, obviously, there's a per-demand cost, but at the end of the day, if you need those resources for a short period of time, they are available on demand rather than having to shell out for the infrastructure. So it makes a lot of sense, and I think as more businesses look to use these sort of tools, machine learning is another one, some of these complex calculations, again, they're going to be able to take benefit of that and just use it as they need. And we all know that typically once we shut an Azure machine down, we're not being charged very much at all, a little bit for storage, but that's the way I use the Azure machines typically when I do demos, spin them up and close them down when I finished, and really don't chop a huge amount of CPU time. So again, I think flexibility is great.
And if you go to my blog site too, and we'll put a link in the show notes, there's a blog post that I put together about in Azure automation, setting up a script to power up and power down virtual machines in parallel at the same time. So if you've got like a whole bunch of virtual machines like I do, you can do it in one hit, so it doesn't take much time at all. The other things that are in the news is Azure SQL plans. Now, Azure SQL has been around for a long, long time in Azure. New plan has come out called P15, a whopping 4,000 DTUs and 1 terabyte of storage. It's the biggest plan at the moment. Now, what is a DTU, Rob? Do you know what a DTU is?
Something unit, that's for sure.
Stands for Database Transition Units. That's a good question. Something like that. But basically, it's a blended measure of CPU, memory, reads, and writes is what it is. We'll put a link in the show notes to it. But basically, that's out now, the new plan for SQL. Yes, as I said before, it's 4,000 DTUs. The previous one that was there before, the previous biggest and the fastest that they had before was 1,750 DTUs. So it's a huge jump. For that. The other news as well, which I guess is not brand new, but it's come out just recently, as well as the 2 regions in the UK and 2 regions in Germany. 2 new Azure regions were announced or have been announced for South Korea. Did you hear about that, Rob?
Yep.
You did?
Why not?
One being in Seoul and the other one being somewhere else. Now, how's this? Now, South Korea is ranked number one globally for having the fastest internet speeds in the world. So, I think it's a good move on Microsoft's behalf, and my gut feeling is the Azure data centers in South Korea are going to go quite well, because one of the main roadblocks, or the primary roadblocks for people to move to the cloud, is internet capacity. So, the fact that South Korea's got the fastest internet in the world, if you're like a general company with your business in South Korea, Azure opens its doors and you stick all your servers in there and everything else, and you pretty much won't know any different, because the speed of the internet will be so quick, it'll be exactly the same as what it was normally on-prem.
Yeah, and I think obviously we're seeing more and more data centers roll out to places like India, obviously South Korea. So again, we're seeing much greater uptake, and I think that's great, but it also means that people that I suppose think they had Azure data centers to themselves, maybe like the US and to an extent here in Australia. Need to realise that, again, these sort of countries that do look forward when it comes to internet connectivity and improved broadband, hint, hint, Australian government, really need to have that in place so that we can be competitive as well. So, again, imagine a place like South Korea with really quick broadband now with Azure data centres, Office 365. I mean, oh, man, that's really going to make some differences. So part of it is Microsoft's providing the infrastructure. Certainly recommend that we need to get on our wagon here
and move to South Korea.
Yeah, or Japan, and basically stay competitive. So that's my my 2 cents worth on that.
So what's happening on the Office 365 front?
There's always something happening, always as much as Azure for sure. The big thing that has been announced by Microsoft is that from September the 1st, the dial-in PSTN conferencing will become available in Australia, which means that you can call into a Skype for Business meeting using a normal landline. It also indicates that probably, again, we're speculating here, that the PSTN calling and cloud PBX functionality of Office 365 are not far away. So don't quote me on anything, but I think they're going to be pretty big. They're already rolled out in the US and the UK. I think that's going to be – I have a lot of customers or people that I deal with that actually are waiting on that, are sending back on-premise PBX systems to wait for this cloud version from Microsoft. So that's going to be huge when it rolls out. So again, from September 1, we'll get the PSTN conferencing ability, and hopefully not far away will be the ability to do direct PSTN calling to any landline in the world.
So you reckon somewhere they've got like a group of or a team of people that work around the clock just to take emergency calls?
I'm not sure. My understanding would be is they have to provide, obviously, emergency dial tone. And I think part of that... Yeah, and I think there's probably, again, it's probably outsourced. There's probably a company that provides it. Microsoft is a very large telco now, thanks to the acquisition of Skype and also integration with Skype for Business. So they may have their own. I don't know. But
Philippines.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, you don't know. They might do it out of the US. They might do a roaming where it goes around the world because, again, you've got people in data centers as well. So I don't know for sure. But, again, there are plenty of options there, and that's hopefully not...
I know. Maybe it's Cortana.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
It's like you ring up and it's a voice-activated thing.
Yeah, press one for if there's blood or an artery showing, perhaps.
But it won't be too bad. I mean, it's machine learning. It'll get better.
Well, you want to be great from the word go. You don't want it to make mistakes even early on. So anyway, we're getting off the topic here a bit. So I think that the other thing that I'll mention here quickly in the Office 365 world is that we're now seeing the new interface for SharePoint lists being rolled out. So we've seen document libraries get a makeover. We're now seeing the next step in this progression with an upgrade or makeover of SharePoint into lists. So if you'd make no changes, you should start seeing your lists in SharePoint Online and your team sites look new with a new interface. So again, probably by the end of this year, SharePoint's going to look to be a very different item than what it was previously. So that's good. I think it works really well, but it can be a bit of a shock for some people. So, but that change is coming.
Just a facelift, or is it different in the back end as well?
I think that the back end stays the same. The front end, again, you know, you can still get to the features using the traditional model. So you can get to the traditional or the classic interface, as they're calling it. So all the features are still there. It's just that, again, they're focusing on the more user-friendly ones and obviously trying to get more people to use the SharePoint side of it without being intimidated by the product. So again, one of my credos is that it is a big change to move to SharePoint Online, very different from files and folders, and a lot of users do need help and some assistance doing that. And I think Microsoft's doing the right thing by, again, simplifying the interface, removing a lot of the clutter, and certainly make it easier for people to use with and more intuitive. But still recommend training because that's how I make money. So please contact me for training. But in the long run, yes, I think it's a better move and it is an improved interface.
Speaking of which, you are doing some training currently at the moment for collaboration and Office 365.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on for some resellers. We're looking, again, the Skype for Business stuff is very popular because obviously the cloud PBX is coming and the PSTN connectivity. We're seeing an uptake with more and more people moving to the SharePoint Online platform, looking how to collaborate, not just upload files. And we're also dealing with the consumption. So we're looking at how to get more people to use all the features of products like Office 365 and Yammer. We typically find that many people only use email. They need to look at using Yammer, Dell, Power BI, and the same thing with Azure. We typically find that they're only using maybe virtual machines. They should be using backup and all the other options that are available. So the idea is to educate resellers and end users on all the features that they are typically paying for in their subscription but not yet using.
Excellent. And also, too, we should mention about our new email address for feedback.
Wow, already. I hope that works.
It'll be right. It'll be up and running.
I like that. Must be hosted in Azure, is it?
Yes, it is. Correct. So it'll be feedback@needtoknow.cloud.
Wow. Sounds as though we've got a new domain there, Mark.
We do. We bought it just recently, needtoknow.cloud. A pretty cool domain.
Excellent. All right. Well, again, we can also be contacted on the Twitter as we always are and our normal email addresses, but that's probably the best way to send information. We also encourage people to give us a review on iTunes. It helps surface it and make it available to more people and also spread the word. We're obviously looking to get the word out to more people and grow our subscriber base as well. So many ways to contact us, and we certainly appreciate everybody who does listen in to us regularly.
And hopefully soon we'll have a website on there too, but at the moment it's just an email address. feedback@needtoknow.cloud. Have you got any other news?
Oh, there's always news, but I think we better to get on with our guest for this episode.
And your guest is?
Good question.
It's Jeffrey Hughes.
Yeah, I think we get on with the episode. And like I said, everybody, thanks for tuning in, and we will speak with you shortly. And I'm joined in this episode by Jeffrey Hughes. Jeffrey, welcome.
Thanks, Robert. Great to be here.
So before we kick off on our discussion in this podcast, again, what we'll do is I'll get Jeff just to introduce himself, let the listeners know who he is and what he does. So if you could do that for us, Jeff, that'd be great.
Yeah, cheers, Robert. So I'm the operations manager at Interconnect. We started out as a traditional managed services provider, but over the last, I'd say, 3 to 4 years, we've branched out into our own network and cloud offerings. Our cloud business, Connect Cloud, is our cloud arm that, funnily enough, covers all things cloud. And our network business is ConnectNet, which covers our network side of things.
Cool. Well, you've mentioned cloud a lot of times there. It must be a big part of the business now.
It is a massive part of the business, and something that we've been looking to grow over the last 3 to 4 years. And, you know, in that time, as you would attest to, there's been just such rapid change that, if you don't keep up with things, you're definitely going to fall behind.
Yeah, so this cloud thing's not pretend, it's actually for real?
That's it. Yeah, absolutely.
Amazing. All right. So what we've asked Jeff to come on and speak about is one of the distribution models for things like Office 365 and Azure. Now, the typical three models we have for people buying or reselling Office 365 and Azure are: the first is the direct purchase using credit card. You go to the Microsoft portal, sign up, put your credit card in, and off you go. Second option is to purchase under what's known as open licensing. Basically, this is like a 12-month sort of rolling contract, and again, it's something that's done through a reseller. There is a bit of admin overhead to doing that. The third option, which is the one we're going to talk about, is something called the Cloud Solution Provider, or CSP, which is relatively new from Microsoft. Now, what that allows you to do is to buy from a large vendor and then basically white label the services and provide them to customers along with others that may be available in a marketplace, including third-party providers. And you basically bill, or the reseller bills the customer directly, so the customer receives bills from the reseller, and then the CSP provider, the vendor, bills the reseller and not directly to the client. So it seems to be the model that Microsoft is preferring, is pushing the resellers towards. What's sort of been your experiences with that move to CSP as compared to some of the other models that I've mentioned there?
Yeah, so you pretty much wrapped it up there. I mean, Robert, we've travelled the path of licensing, firstly via syndication with Telstra, and then open through our distributors, and now CSP. And we've just found with the CSP program, it allows us to take advantage of SaaS opportunities and really gives us flexibility into how we deliver our cloud services. So, you know, with the restrictions that we had via syndication, with Telstra controlling the billing, obviously took away that element of what we could do and how we could package up our agreements to basically provide one bill for all our services to our customers, which, after having spoken to many other partners over the journey, that's definitely the key part of cloud deliverables that that is either the most important or one of the most important things. I found with the CSP program and with the ability to basically purchase licenses monthly with true up, true down, it's given us that flexibility that we can roll that into a cloud agreement. We can roll that into a web hosting agreement. We can roll that into AV, anti-spam, any of those sort of services, and have that flexibility around, you know, what the customer wants to do. Because at the end of the day, that's really what it comes down to, what the customer wants and how we can deliver that and meet their needs. So what we found a degree of flexibility once that shift to open happened, and yeah, we found that obviously being able to control the billing via open licenses was great, but there were other pitfalls, like a slight delay between ordering and activation. Could be sometimes a day or 2 days if there was an issue. And, you know, you really need these licenses right away. What I found with the CSP program is that once you order the license, you've basically got it. It's instant. So you can start actioning it, you can start setting up your tenant, and you can start tying it in. It's not going to delay any sort of bigger project that you have with that client.
So I think obviously that we've come a long way, I suppose, from the initial days when it was, you know, direct via a credit card or directly from a syndicated partner, which has obviously been part of the Australian landscape for a long time, and that's obviously changed. And for a lot of resellers, there was a big roadblock to doing that, because their traditional model was they would buy a piece of kit from a provider, a big vendor, they would slap some margin on and then push it out the door. Now, I suppose part of the question is, obviously there's a convenience factor with licensing, margin or the commercial profit that you make on license is relatively small compared to the services. So is the way that you're licensing and providing it to customers, even with CSP, more a convenience factor, or is do you see that as providing some sort of appreciable profit to your organization?
Look, I'm seeing a bit of both, more so the convenience factor, but I am actually seeing, when I compare the licensing models, that it is a bit more cost effective to do it via CSP with some licenses, but that's really not what it's all about. It's about what you're rolling those services in with. So, you know, you mentioned it earlier that, you know, we're seeing customers moving away from the building and managing their own infrastructure, and looking to leverage, you know, a platform as a service offering, you know, as much as they possibly can. And it's attractive to customers, you know, particularly in that SMB space, because they want lots of these moving parts. You know, they want their email, they want their office, you know, they want their hosted server, they want their AV, they want their web hosting, and the way that we can tie it all in together with CSP, it comes across a lot more flexible, than it has in the past. So, customer at the end of the day has better functionality, they've got better availability of the tools that they need to run their business, and it's just not comparable to a DIY solution that, you know, you used to be able to do in the past.
So, I suppose the way to go to market, obviously, with the CSP program, is that the only offering that you have, or do you span across all three licenses still?
No, look, we span across, you know, CSP and open, but I've gradually started migrating customers away from the open program to the CSP program. Another reason for that, and I have actually found that process to be quite seamless, so when customers were nearing expiration of their open agreements and open licenses, I have then added them to the CSP program, let one license basically lapse and start with their new license. This gives us the flexibility as well to control a bit more of that, of the sound and that noise that they get. So often they'll get a notice, you know, from Microsoft saying that their license is about to expire, and to contact their reseller. And particularly when they're a managed services client, they just expect you to be managing that whole process anyway. They don't really need that extra element of noise or confusion around what's happening with their licenses. So this way as well, yeah, there's a bit of that control around the messaging. And I also find, particularly we're doing at the moment the CSP predominantly through Ripe. They've developed their own portal. Ingram Micro has done the same thing, and there's other services that they're offering around that, to do with migration, to do with support, that, you know, in the future these are sort of things that that might be used more and more often too.
Okay, so again, the change of licensing model obviously seems to be a very positive thing for resellers. You're obviously making it, rolling into your offering and making it easier to deploy, which is obviously reducing your overheads, and again giving you that speed, the speed to market. Now, the typical, can you give us an idea, maybe, is there a typical licensing, is there a typical license that you're selling? Is there a typical 15 users? What's the sort of typical seat level or customer that you're dealing with, or is it just that varied these days?
No, look, it does vary a fair bit, Robert, but one thing that we're looking at is a recommendation, obviously, that you've given many times over, which is, go for the E-plans. We're looking at E1, E3. Hopefully in the future we'll look at some E5 plans for our customers. You know, you're looking at anywhere from 5 to 50 seats, you do have, far more flexibility with those E-plans, and that's really what we're trying to focus on. We've done a little bit, and I hope you won't shudder when I say, some of the Exchange Online plans, really for some basic web hosting customers that before would have some basic email functionality rolled into their web hosting package. We found that quite difficult to manage if there was any sort of issues. It really wasn't, it really was taking up a lot of time, not something that we were making a lot of money from. So we looked to try to make that process a bit easier as well. And for those customers, price sensitivity was very high. We wanted to make sure that we kept those customers, but also offered them, a fully packaged email solution. So for those customers, we combine the Exchange Online plans with our web hosting plans, and they're not really managed customers. They're sort of a bit more hands off, and I mean, they love it. They've got far more functionality than what they had previous with their inbuilt email packages. But like I said, majority of customers were focusing on those e-plans.
Okay, so what are you sort of seeing, the demand out there? Is are customers coming to you sort of saying, we want Office 365, we know what the product, or are you going to them saying Office 365 is the best fit because it will do this, this, and this? Has it reached that sort of tipping point of the product where customers are aware of it, or is that really something you're still educating the customers on, that it is the best solution?
I think it's still a mix of the two. We are seeing more and more customers come forward, particularly when they're at the end of hardware life cycle, and the conversation around that has shifted from, okay, you need to replace your server, you need to replace your workstations, you need to replace this switch, etc., etc., to basically you need to get a new switch in, we need to make sure that your connection is good enough, and we're going to move you to the cloud. And then they start going, oh, okay, and so can we move to Office 365? And you start hearing that a lot more, whereas you never in the past used to hear customers pipe up and ask you about different Microsoft licenses. They didn't used to question, what version of Office they've got and what version of Exchange they've got. But now they are seeing a lot more stuff in market about that. So they are starting to ask the questions, particularly with the bigger customers. With the smaller customers, it's probably the latter, which is, we recommend to them, look, this best suits your need, and this is why. What we have done as well is looked at a real mix of licenses for some customers. Some who have some email-only users, we'll put them on E1 plans. For the other users that do need that full suite of Office products, we will put them on the E3 plans and give them the flexibility as well of going, all right, well, that's how we'll start you off, and that sometimes gets us in the door. They might have 10 email-only users, but then two users, with full-fledged Office. Then, they'll go, oh, but those users are now based in the Office more. They need full Office licenses. No worries. We can switch that under the program that we've got them in now, which is really good, not something that we were able to do before.
Okay, so in this situation too, are you finding where customers are coming, or they're coming to you and you're selling them a license that that suits their needs, and they don't need to re-license, or because you've now got the flexibility to chop and change, to add different licenses, to start with a Exchange-only plan and upgrade to an E3 or something else, is that the sort of the way it's going as well? And they're finding more customers, picking and choosing and changing on demand, or are they, again, they tend to buy and sit at that level?
They still tend to buy and sit at that level, but the fact that we can give them that option now of being able to change, I think is a real good selling point, so that they know down the track, look, they're not locked into a 12-month contract of this particular license. They can move up, they can change. That is something that is appealing at the, you know, at the contract level when you are, you know, negotiating with a new client, I guess. But something that, that I guess is even better than that is that it's about the ability to tie in these monthly licenses to everything else that we do. So that's what the real selling point to the customer is. So when they go, okay, well, we've got 10 users now and we want AV, we want anti-spam, we want web hosting, we want, you know, a cloud server, all that stuff. When it comes down to the talk around the users and they go, oh, okay, so you can break down, you know, what those users are into, you know, full-time users, part-time users, light users, and then associate certain licenses with them. It comes quite an attractive proposition because then you're really talking about the needs of the business and you're starting to get an understanding about, you know, what that business is, who are the people within that business and how they operate differently rather than everyone just being a number. And we found that that works particularly well and effectively with the smaller businesses who, you know, are a bit more price sensitive and really take these things into account when they're deciding their next move.
Okay, so obviously they've now got this additional flexibility, they've got the ability to move between licenses it's giving them that obviously the reduction in the on-prem infrastructure to give them, you know, the stuff that they're trying to achieve. Are you finding customers, wanting to use the additional services? So one, the experience I've generally had with a lot of customers that I view that already have Office 365 or I'm brought in after the fact is that the majority of them tend to mainly be using email and don't know about any of the other services that they may have, like Yammer or SharePoint, or they're still confused about OneDrive and that sort of thing. I mean, what's the usage of the additional services beyond the basic email? Are you seeing them adopting that? Are you seeing them showing interest in that? Is that something that you're building into your offerings to go back to them and say, right, now you've got email, let's do, SharePoint Teams, sort of, let's work with OneDrive for Business?
Yeah, absolutely. I think SharePoint's the big one. We have a customer at the moment who are in the process of moving from on-site infrastructure to a cloud-based offering, and part of that piece is obviously Office 365. Now, with SharePoint, what we've had to do there is that they've shown a lot of interest in how SharePoint works, how it ties in with their line of business applications, what they can do with SharePoint, and it wasn't something that we raised with them initially. So we're now finding that customers are seeing that and wanting to use those services more, understanding that, it's not just email that we've got. We've also got SharePoint. We've also got OneDrive. You know, we haven't pushed OneDrive extensively, but customers have started asking about it, have used, you know, even played around with the personal OneDrive space that they get. You know, we haven't rolled it out into a company-wide solution yet. I think that's, you know, the whole OneDrive piece is getting better, but not quite there yet. But the questions are certainly being asked of what else we can do, and I think that's great, because if a customer identifies that the service that you're giving them can do more, they're not going to then go, okay, well, we'll then take that somewhere else and we'll go use that service somewhere else. They've got that service with you already. They just want to be able to leverage those tools to work with them better.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting thing. I think that, again, there are sort of two sort of businesses out there, and again, two sort of people, I suppose. There's the fixed mindset is, okay, all we need to do is achieve this one task, and another task pops up, and we achieve another task, and, you know, they just keep moving on whatever comes sort of down the funnel. But the interesting thing I find is the organizations who, you know, prepare to take a step back and, okay, well, there's this new tool over here called Yammer. Help us understand how to use it. Let's experiment. Let's try it. And they're open to taking that in. They realize that it's not obviously going to yield results and that sort of thing, but they're willing to embrace it. So, to me, things like OneNote is another good example. It's a very good litmus test, I find, for customers. When you show them OneNote, they've never seen it, you either get a huge adoption and interest, and, oh, we can use this, and this is fantastic, and, or you get, oh, no, that's unimportant. That doesn't help me write Word documents. I'm not interested in that. I mean, are you sort of seeing that as well, that you do have those some traditional companies that are very locked in just doing the processes they're familiar with, while you may have other companies who are really trying to embrace the technology, really, you know, wanting to use the full capacity that they're paying for.
Yeah, absolutely. And we also haven't seen a lot of consistency between what people are really asking for. I had a great example. It was Link at the time, obviously Skype for Business now, but I was giving a demonstration. I had the demonstration tenant all set up for this particular, you know, new customer. They'd come into our office and I had a whole lot of stuff to show them, and I was going through the console and I was showing them the different features of Office 365, and it was going all right, but you know, I wasn't feeling a whole lot. And then I just showed them Link at the time, and just how they could communicate with other people within their organization. They could instant message, they could do all that stuff, and everything was already set up. You know, they already had any of the people that were in their organization would appear in their list, and they found that a really great feature and a really effective feature, and not a thing that I had considered as a great selling point. But it just goes to show that different people will take different elements out of what they can use. Another customer recently was really attracted to the fact that they could have, you know, 5 licenses, you know, and be, they're about to travel. And so they could put one on the laptop they're traveling with. They've got the one in the office they can use. They've got one at home that they can use. And that was a really attractive selling point. And I still think that is a very good selling point, and something that we make an effort to mention to our customers, because, you know, they, again, if they're a traditional customer that thinks about how licensing used to be done, and the requirements about having licensing for all your devices, they either had no idea how it worked or they were just paying a lot of money for it, and they see this as a really cost-effective solution for them.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the other thing is that have you ever been, you know, like you mentioned that situation there, but have you ever been actually surprised by a you know, finding what the customer uses in Office 365? So maybe you've gone in and done the basic email and something simple, and then you've come back and they've been using something that you wouldn't have expected, or they've suddenly adopted Yammer, or they're starting to use Power BI. Have you come across that at all?
Mainly more SharePoint, and just some, you know, customers who I didn't think would even be, you know, playing around in SharePoint, and they see it and they start, you know, seeing what they can do with it and whether it's a useful tool for their business. That one I've seen a few, and I guess it's a particular client that I'm seeing it in, and they're you know, using it to share some files between people within their organization. They're using it to keep a repository of HR materials. They're using it to keep some admin documents. And, you know, these are all, you know, great basic uses, but again, it wasn't something that I had gone through with them. It wasn't something that they had particular training in, but they saw it there. They were savvy enough to think, you know, that's something that I want to see whether it has benefit, and that's great. I mean, that's just, again, gives another tie-in for that customer to the product that, you know, we hadn't initially gone out and seen it as a selling point.
So do you see, I suppose, you know, that going forward, as customers spin up to speed with this and use the product and are a bit more savvy and all that sort of stuff, do you see that that's going to be a challenge to your business in the way that you present things, or you see that more as an opportunity? So what I mean is do you see that the customer self-teaching, self-learning, picking up these, taking the initiative, you know, diving deep, doing research on the internet, or do you think that that knowledge, those ability of those products are actually going to drive more opportunity for you and your business, because the customer is going to come back and say, well, you know, we saw this, but how do we make it work? You know, give us a shortcut, give us the lowdown on that. I mean, what's your feeling on that sort of reality?
Yeah, I think that, look, you're always going to have to support what the customer wants to do. So if a customer comes to you and's gone, look, I was doing some reading about this particular product and I want to start playing around more with, you know, with Yammer, I want to start playing around more with Power BI and see what I can do with it, you know, I'm not going to turn around to them and go, no, sorry, I can't help you out there. It's not something you can do. It's something that you're going to want to allow them to do. But, you know, whether you need to engage a third party to do that, whether you need to, you know, get some in-house training and teach them how to use these tools could be a completely another thing. But it's something that we are going to start seeing more and more often. And, you know, whether it's a good thing, I don't know. Like, we haven't seen it enough to know, but, you know, people are going to want to use more and more features that these tools offer. And I think that's a great thing, because it means that, you know, they'll start talking about them more. They'll start telling, you know, other people that these are the sort of things they're doing now, and, you know, that's great.
Well, it's interesting that, you know, again, I think that when we look back on the traditional model, the MSP model, you know, we had typically file shares, we had, you know, obviously the emails, but now we look at the tools that are available to us in Office 365 and, again, SaaS tools and even wider than that. The sheer variety out there is available, and obviously customers become more savvy. They've got apps on their devices which connect and share the information, and I think that obviously it's about making the solution for the customer, helping them, you know, connect all the bits together, because again the IT provider generally has that knowledge. But the struggle obviously is this stuff is all new for the IT provider. How do you keep up to date? How do you make sure that you're across, you know, things like Power BI and these new things that are coming out, and maybe even the new licensing model? How do you address that, Joe? How does your business address that sort of challenge and sort of saying, well, you know, how do you keep as up to date as you can with products like Office 365 and Azure and any other products that's, you know, at the moment seems to be on such a tear with improvements and updates?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, we put a big focus on training, and I guess you can never do enough training. There's always a balance between needing to run your day-to-day business and have your engineers off doing training. But you know, it is, there is a lot of stuff out there. There is a lot of training resources. There's a lot of courses out there, and one focus of our business now is moving into our gold competency and looking at what sort of training that, you know, we'll need to do to both not only get that, but also being able to support that. We aren't at the point yet, you know, you talk about this sway between, you know, whether customers are coming and asking about certain features or whether, you know, we're telling them what to do. It hasn't pushed enough yet from the customer side of things for us to really go, okay, we really need to up our skills in Power BI. We really need to up our skills in Azure. There's things that, you know, we are focused on and that we do a very good job at, and that is, you know, the deliverables of Office 365, the Exchange components. You know, it's something that we've spent a lot of time doing and mastering. And I think that moving forward, we will need to do and focus on these other tools that you mentioned to upskill in them, because people will start asking about them more and more. And, you know, whether that's an opportunity to actually go out into customers and give training on site might be something that we would look to do in the future. But, you know, at this stage, it's not something that we do. It's something that I'd certainly love to do in the future, because they are asking more and more about these other tools that they can use, as you keep saying.
So, again, obviously you're doing the Office 365 stack, the Microsoft side of the fence there, but are you offering anything else there? Have you got any other sort of offerings or any sort of things that are, you know, you find are filling the gaps or customers are asking? I mean, what's your product mix, I suppose, is the question.
Yeah, sure. So our infrastructure as a service offerings powered by VMware vCloud Director, and we deliver that out of data centers in Sydney and Melbourne. We offer a backup as a service offering that we brand as Connect Protect, and we are starting to do some AWS and Azure consulting services, you know, and you know, with that, we have, I guess we don't have a set offering where we go into a customer and we give them a particular Connect Cloud offering coupled with a Office 365 coupled with a Connect Protect backup service, but it really just comes down to customer requirements and customer needs that we are basically combining all these things. And we see a lot of demand from customers to host you know, Microsoft desktop operating systems. That's traditionally been an issue with you know, to do with the supplier licensing restrictions. That's something that we're trying to work around more and more. And just generally speaking, we're just seeing this real shift in the way that customers are consuming services. So, you know, you say, well, what are the other offerings we can do? It's really the customers are coming to us and going, you know, well, we need to do this, we need to do that, and then we'll go and a lot of the time it is a bespoke offering that we are putting together for them, unless they're at the other end of the spectrum where they're, you know, just after a website and some email addresses, and so, you know, we couple some 365 licenses around that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, let's just, you know, compare to the stuff you used to do when you're an MSP,
you know, are there more products that you're now sort of offering that when you look at it overall, I mean, have you got more things you can now offer and potentially generate, you know, revenue and profit from?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, haven't even mentioned VoIP. That's something that that ties into those offerings as well. And you know, in the future, that looks like that's rapidly changing with the E5 plans and you know what's going to happen there and with Skype for Business. And you know, at the moment, we've got a hosted VoIP offering. We've also done some on-prem voice stuff. So you know, that's something that clients are seeing is, you know, look, if we can get everything through one provider and we can put your connectivity, get the connectivity as well and they can get the one bill and they can just deal with the one person and save that time of having to deal with multiple parties. That's what we're seeing a lot of emphasis on these days. And, you know, customers don't want to have to deal with multiple people. The less the better, I believe.
Okay, so again, you mentioned obviously some of the features that are coming to the Office 365 space, the PSTN connectivity of Skype and the connectivity to the conferencing in Skype, but, you know, what else do you see or what else would you like to see, I suppose, in those sort of product offerings that you can then now start providing to clients? Is there anything that's missing? Is there anything that you think would make a major difference? Obviously, the PSTN connectivity is going to be huge, I believe, but is there anything else as well besides that?
Yeah, look, I think that if the OneDrive for Business improvements come out and OneDrive can in the future be a real valuable business tool, and I don't know whether it will replace, you know, an on-site file share, but even for, you know, or a cloud-based file share, but even if it appeals to those customers, you know, between the, you know, kind of 2 to 10 seats where they have all their, they have, you know, their obviously their website hosted, their 365 package, you know, and they don't need sort of anything else. You know, if they can use, you know, OneDrive for Business as their file share, I think, to me, that's the biggest missing piece. If that can become a seamless experience, that would be a really strong selling point.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I think that, it's sort of a migration too. I mean, you've got users who are migrating from traditional file shares which they're familiar with and they want to replicate that, but again, in some ways that's holding them back and limiting their ability to use the newer technology that come with SharePoint, document check-in, check-out, version control, metadata. Unfortunately, doesn't generally get supported when you go around syncing to the desktop. We've also got the internet, you know, broadband challenge with the connectivity to the cloud. So again, there's this, you know, there is the great opportunity that's still there as well. And I think the experience I've had with a lot of resellers is they see the migration to the cloud, unfortunately, is the end of, you know, the end of what they can offer the clients. And that's obviously a skill thing, but as you've indicated, there's so much more opportunity to sell, you know, the Microsoft stack, if you're familiar with that, but also additional products. But I think there's also the opportunity to partner up with others who can provide services in a cooperative environment with yourself to help boost, obviously solve customer problems, but you know, give everybody the opportunity. Now, the services that you provide, obviously you're based out of Melbourne. What sort of the range or the geography that you're providing solutions for customers? You know, obviously you're probably doing it outside of the state, but give us an idea of, you know, sort of the range of customers and where they're located and what sort of industries they're in that you're providing solutions for.
Yeah, sure thing. So, you know, we do predominantly have our customer base in Melbourne, but we've got customers in Sydney, Adelaide, Perth, and it really comes down to, you know, the different offerings that we have. We have always had, you know, a breadth of offerings. We haven't just focused on the MSP side of things. You know, we've, you know, always done the hardware procurement. We've always done licensing, VMware licensing, Veeam licensing. And so there's different elements of what we can offer that appeal to different businesses. So traditionally, on the MSP side of things, I think our customer, you know, average customer size, probably about 10 users, up to the biggest customer would have been about 150, 160 users. I'd say that's still about the same for the MSP side of things, but I am finding that with Again, back on the 365 piece, because that is attractive to sell to even, you know, the 2-3 seat sort of companies, that, yeah, we have some smaller clients and, you know, they in the past might have proved to be, you know, not worth our while. But when you've got, when you've got a whole lot of stuff that you can sell them and you can do it quickly and effectively and package other offerings around it, they can be quite attractive too. So, in terms of what spaces we operate, really everything from, you know, the professional services industry, legal and accounting, to, you know, private practice, to manufacturing and really a whole lot.
So I suppose the other question I've got for you as we're looking to, maybe round up our conversation is, how do you find new customers, new prospects? Are they coming to you from referrals? Are they, you actually doing some active marketing? How are you attracting the new customers, obviously, to your business?
Yeah, look, we thankfully have a lot of our business from referrals, and from, I guess, companies that buy other companies is always a good one too, because once they're, once you're in with one, you tend to get in with the other. But we are, you know, looking more and more at leads that we get from other means. So whether it be from roadshows or whether it be from particular networking events, there's always opportunities around the corner, and it's just a matter of working out, you know, what's a good fit and you know what you can offer to market and what works for your business. So sometimes, you know, there's the right customer and the wrong customer, and sometimes it takes a bit of time to work that out. You know, and other times you've just got a nice mix where you can pitch a whole lot of services to a customer and they ask the right questions and the next thing you know you've got a project underway and that's always a good thing.
Okay, good. Well, like I said, it seems to me as though you've made sort of a transition from an MSP to a bit of a cloud, private cloud provider, but also embracing the public cloud. You're taking advantage of the abilities of all three offerings to an extent, and moving to the market's giving you that dynamics. You're able to supply and provide customer solutions based on those resources, and it's obviously giving you more opportunity rather than less. Which I think,
yeah, and there's just more. There's just more flexibility in the marketplace than what there was before. So that's really been the biggest advantage. You know, if we go back to what we started with the transition in the licensing programs, that's just my biggest message. That it's just the flexibility that you can add to, you know, the CSP program and licensing through that to the rest of your business is paramount to what we do. It's very complementary to how we can deliver our services.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the big change now, is that the ability to, like I said, provision licenses with CSP is so much quicker, so much faster. You can get it up and running. You can basically almost, I suppose, enable a cloud service like Office 365 via CSP immediately. So there's not that traditional wait of, okay, hang on, we'll talk to you, we'll do a quote, we'll go back, we'll get the prices, we'll get the notes accepted,
right,
and then, so again, this quoting process, you can really deliver this quickly. And again, you can do it at no cost because you can provide people a trial beforehand. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, just to finish off on that sort of question, are you finding that people are taking it on straight away as a licensing, or are you going down, let's do a trial first, 30 days, and then grow from there? What's your sort of mix between doing a trial and actually implementing, the subscription immediately?
No, look, we tend to implement the subscription immediately. I have set up some trials for customers in the past, but use them more as a selling tool to actually provision, the demo tenant and show them the features of Office 365 and the particular features that, would be attractive to them and features that they would use. Because, like you said, it's just instant with the CSP licensing these days. What I have found that is that if a customer signs off, on a licensing agreement and I put them on CSP, I will set that up straight away. And sometimes, as it happened recently, if there's a champion within that business that really wants to drive the business's take up of Office 365, I'll give them their license first, have them, play around with it, work out that interactivity between, you know, 365 and line of business applications that they use. And whilst we're in the background doing the rest of the project, so whether it might be setting up their cloud servers, whether it might be setting up their backup services, you know, doing all those other bits and pieces, you know, we've already got someone within the business using the tools, spruiking the tools to the other staff members, and already starting to ask questions around how they do certain things, so that by the time you finish an implementation, you know, they're good to go, and you've also got someone within the business who's got that higher level knowledge of how to use the tool that helps everyone else out there and helps you out, because it's just it's less questions that come to you, less support tickets, and kind of everyone wins out of it.
So let's finish off on this question. What do you see amongst your peers? I mean, people who are, you know, resellers like yourself, same sort of size or whatever, you know, their adoption of Office 365, the CSP model, the opportunities that obviously you're taking advantage of in your business. Are you seeing that the resellers are adopting that? Are they slow to adopt? Are they, fast to adopt? What's your feeling on the general reseller market when it comes to, you know, taking the opportunities, you know, something like CSP or some of the other things that we've talked about? I mean, is that something that they're all embracing? Are they lagging behind? What's your just general opinion or feel on that?
Look, I think there's still a degree of confusion out there about the different licenses and how they work. That's certainly the feel that I've got from speaking to a few other people who run similar business to what we do. So I think that there is still a bit of education around. I mean, I know we were quite slow to get into the CSP program and really start to build, you know, our offerings around it. You know, there are others that are flying ahead with it, that do full offerings with it, with mail migration tools, with different levels of service that they roll in per month, you know, 24/7, you know, support and all that sort of stuff. So, Rob, I think it's still a real mix. I think people are still finding their way and really, you know, working out what works best for them. And I think a lot of the time, at least speaking from experience, you start to really develop these offerings when there's a need for it from your customer base. You know, I'd love to say, you know, I'll take a step back from the business and go, okay, I'm gonna sit for a couple of days and work out, you know, how best can we sell Office 365 via CSP. It just doesn't happen. It happens, you know, organically when customers have the demand for it. And so I guess that's why now the demand is starting to build, and the more we do with it, the more that we realize, you know, what we can leverage off it.
Yeah, so again, obviously, I think part of it is that we're, you know, in a fairly seismic shift within, you know, not only the customer side of the business, but also the reseller side with the offerings that are changing. And as we sort of started off jokingly, that the sort of, you know, the cloud is the big opportunity here, and, you know, it's a way, it needs to be a change of evolution and understanding the offerings, and things are very different from the traditional model and they're happening a lot faster. But I suppose the core message is that A, it's time to get on board, as much, you know, basically commit and you know, start really taking advantage of it full throttle, but also that, again, it provides more opportunity, not less. There's, you know, once you get into it, I'm sure it's big, it's maybe difficult to manage or, you know, make the changes, but again, the opportunity is there. So, I mean, you know, I think that's probably a good way to summarize everything there. But since we are finishing off, what I'll get Jeff to do is maybe just, you know, give us your last thoughts there on what we've chatted about, anything you'd like to highlight, or, you know, some experience you'd like to throw out to the listeners, and then just let them know how they can obviously get in touch with you, keep up to date with what your business does and what it offers.
Yeah, sure thing. Yeah, thanks again, Robert, for the time. I know that it's been a long time coming that said I'd do something with you, so I appreciate it. I just wrap things up by really just saying, from experience, you know, with the CSP program and with the open program before it, that it really comes down to getting an understanding of how these programs work best for your customers. And that's something that we've started to spend a fair bit of time on particularly, let's keep saying this, CSP program, but what I found within that once you have the tools to be able to, you know, instantly provision, manage, and really support your customers, it takes away any sort of barrier to not being able to deliver your other services, because you can roll everything in, you know, to your monthly bills. You have the ability to respond to your customer demands when they want to add a license, when they want to remove licenses, where things within their business start to change. And so what you're doing, you're really taking an active interest, you know, in their business and what they're doing day to day. And there's just huge, huge value to that. So in closing, happy for people to get in touch with me, happy to continue the conversation. Email is probably best. So Jeff, JFF at Interconnect. So Interconnect with a K, INTERCONNECT.com.au. So not a hugely active, Twitter user, there is an Interconnect Twitter handle as well.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll put all those links in the show notes for listeners. And again, thank Jeff very much for his time and his insight into the industry, and especially around the CSP program and the benefits that it's providing his business. Again, make sure that you do hit up Jeff for any questions or queries on what we've chatted about today. But from me, the best way to keep in contact with myself is via the Twitter at DirectorCIA, and to keep up with the technical information that I'm regularly producing is the blog.ciaops.com. And with that, I'll thank you all for listening to another episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.